Welcome back to the Lantern Recycling Podcast, presented by Zwift. The final recap of the Santos Tour Down Under Stage 5 GC over, starting in Unley, finishing on Mount Lofty. A hard circuit, the Basque with Ibar stage light, the best we can do in Australia. And actually a pretty nice design, a very hard circuit. This stage, for example, riders doing over 300 normalized at, you know, or 5 watts per kilo normalized for the 2 hours and 50 minutes, however long it took the stage to do, 2 hours 40. A pretty hard stage for a January stage race. We had Jayvine in the leader's jersey trying to defend a 15-second lead against both Yates and Bilbao apiece. Sheffield, you know, a fair bit back. There was a 30-second gap between Bilbao in third and Sheffield in fourth, and then a whole host of other riders. But there could still be changes on GC. Guys able to move up, move down. You know, you have a mechanical in the final list, you lose 30 seconds, you're moving from 5th to 15th. Big changes possible because of the tight gaps. And yeah, just a hilly circuit finishing up on Mount Lofty. You didn't watch, Benji. Well, you watched on delay, but you had some Sunday sleep in.
Yeah, I had some Sunday sleep in. By the way, this time we had pre-decided not to show up in the middle of the night when it comes to my time. So it's not my fault that we're late. It's a both decision thing. I got called out in the comments yesterday.
I was like, Benji, listen, please don't wake up at 4 a.m. It's unnecessary. We're rushing to put the content out for the European audience. It's so they can listen to it at 5:30 on a Sunday morning. No, midday will do, I think.
I think so as well. Anyway, break formation was happening, and Luke Blapp was one of the riders that was very active to try and go in the breakaway in the Aussie jersey. I got to say it again, Aussie NC jerseys are my favorite jerseys in the peloton. I love the yellow with the green, always loved it. Gold with green, whatever you call it. Ah, oh, perfect. Anyway, tried to get in the breakaway, and UAE tried to slip riders with the moves that Blapp was trying to create. And that was kind of not really surprised, but I was expecting Bike Exchange to do that, Jayco to do that. And they were controlling the breakaway. They had riders actually closing down the groups that UAE and Blapp were forming in that way. But a bit later, Matthews did decide to go in the breakaway, a four-man breakaway that went up the road for a tiny bit, where Matthews took the intermediate sprint points. Is it surprising that Jayco didn't try to send Matthews in the larger break, but decided to go in the smaller break without a Ineos rider there?
I think teams could have been a little bit more creative and used this parkour. I think UAE, they're a strong team here, but they, not lucky is the wrong word, you know, because what I'm suggesting is not conventional. But yeah, I don't think, you know, even though Bling's on 230, if you put him in the proper big break, that's really annoying for UAE to chase, because you can't really let it out too much.
Yeah,
or who else could have done that? That has 2 liters up there. Maybe Antimarché with Bistrom and Page. Maybe they're too close, but at that point. But yeah, I didn't really see teams taking advantage of having 2 liters at all.
I agree, very much agree. And there's also the aspect of, if Matthews goes in that larger break, what is UAE going to do with that one rider they put up there? It's kind of like the situation that they had in Basque Country 2 years ago, where they had Hirschi in the breakaway, and then they had to call him back later because he was in the group that they were supposed to catch in the first place. So you're creating situations that UAE has to decide in the car what to do with. And in the past, they've made mistakes with that. I do feel like in the Santos Tour Down Under, their tactical decision-making has been okay. So maybe they would have responded okay on this one. But anyway, that group was caught very soon after, to be honest. So Matthews had taken 3 seconds, 3 points as well, the seconds not being that relevant, the points basically already securing his points jersey at this point in the race. But once again, a group up the road, Hepburn in there now when it comes to Bike Exchange, Jayco. I'll keep calling it Bike Exchange for a few months, I'm afraid. We've got Bahrain and Quickstep actually closing down the group of 13 at that very moment. And, well, they weren't pacing it completely down yet. It was a group that stayed out for long and actually took away the points and seconds at the second intermediate. We have the second last Mount Lofty where stuff really started showing up again. And Blapp was starting to pace with Hajduk in the wheel. And I was like, Blapp pacing, Hajduk in the wheel, catching the group that was ahead. What is their plan here? Is it their plan to like set up Hayter here? Or is it the plan to like launch Hajduk? Like, because I didn't see Hayter, but then again, Hayter's positioning is always at the back of the group. So I don't know what they were trying there. Any clue?
Nope. I don't really know. That was for KOM, right? As well.
Well, Plap was facing half the climb, so it was kind of surprising that he would do that if it was only KOM.
Yeah. To launch Hayter, I don't really know. I can't figure it out, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
It's been now, well, like Plap, I think, was statistically eliminated from KOM, and then Hayter ended up leapfrogging him in KOM, but they were both like fourth and fifth. I couldn't really figure it out. Maybe they're just trying to make something happen. But yeah, I don't really understand. Maybe Sheffield wasn't feeling too good after his crash, but
yeah.
The Ineos week has been a bit confusing to me all round.
Yeah, for me as well, to be honest. But Dinham was the weirdest one on the climb because Dinham had been in that earlier break where you have 13 riders. He gets called by the group with Plap pacing at the front. And the next 3 to 4 minutes, probably 2 minutes, but it felt like 3 to 4 minutes because of how cringe it was. He was riding next to Plap while Plap was pacing, half-wheeling him while Plap was trying to pace the group. And I don't know if it was some kind of like pissing competition of who could stay at the front of the group the longest, but Plap was clearly getting frustrated to the point where he went to the side and Hajduk started pacing instead. And then Plap moved back to the front when Dinham was gone. So yeah, it was super weird situation. I don't know what Dinham was trying there. He was caught. Then he tries half-wheeling Plap. I don't know what he got out of the stage as a consequence, but not the craziest stuff. But to be honest, second last Mount Lofty, still no moves by Jayco. So they were betting everything on the final climb when it comes to Yates. Do you think the reason for that is that Hepburn got called early, Matthews got called early? If they had a satellite rider up the road, do you think Yates would have gone earlier?
Nah, because it's really not that hard, this profile still. I know I said it's Basque Country light, but it, you know, we're talking 1.5K, 6.5%. Yes, there's some other climbing, and yes, they're racing it hard, but there's no 2 kilometer, 10% launching pad. I think another thing I'd like to note is UAE. I was quite surprised. Maybe Catania was a bit closer, but for the most part, they had the best break ever. Because it was on 5 minutes. The closest guy was on 5 minutes, I think, Lefay. And I was like, how the fuck did Lefay lose 5 minutes in this race? It must have been in the crosswinds the day before. But yeah, that usually in a stage race like this, you'll have someone on a really annoying gap of 90 seconds who'll sneak in there because you can't control everything when it's splitting up. So that was good for them, and he effort controlled. So the UAE were coming and looking really strong in this finish. I was thinking Hishikovi might get it done because they've had a lot of other teams do the work because of the way the race had played out, and they kept their cool. I remember seeing through the finish line a Quickstep rider trying to bridge across, and Vine say to teammates, just let it go. Like, we don't need to overchase solo riders who aren't a threat on GC trying to bridge across the break sitting in no man's land. So they were doing everything right. But yeah, the question was, as Benny said, Bling had sort of burnt one match and then would burn another one later. It was clear that Jayco were going all in for Yates GC and maybe the stage if he could get it. I think the right thing to do, actually, to give him the chance to go for GC, the guy sitting in second. Bling had plenty, you know, he had the chance yesterday in Wollonga. But I will mention before we get to that final, before I throw to Benji, I've had a great week at the TDU, just over a week actually, and it's all been thanks to Zwift sending me out here, getting the flavor of the race, presenting the Young Riders jersey, the Zwift Young Riders jersey to Magnus Sheffield yesterday. It was very, very cool. No, despite the memes on Twitter, I didn't say you're going to win the 2025 Tour de France, even though he is going to, but I thought it'd be a bit weird to just say, here you go, by the way, my Jean in 18 months. No, again, I got the math wrong. Again, 2.5 years, but it's been a great week. Got to see the race on top of Lofty today. That's why I'm extra sunburned. I'd like to thank Wes Salzberger. I think Benji's PCM nemesis, is that right, from back in the day?
Oh, I don't want to talk about it. Like, every single time a career mode starts on Pro Cycling Manager, the first races are the Australian Championships and the Santos Tour and Under. And every single time, this dude, Wes Sulzberger, went in the bloody breakaway and won from the breakaway. And I was riding with one rider, so I couldn't control the breakaway. So devastating. Every time I tried to get in the breakaway, the peloton was cut. Yeah, okay, I'm getting salty here. We should continue onwards, I'm afraid.
Anyway, Wes is actually also a real person, and he's been great this week, making it a fun week. So thanks to them. Thanks also, to Tim Aspesh for sorting me a bike out for the week, which helped out as well. Yeah, I know. For a very, very slow freeway, old tall climb. But yeah, it's fun nonetheless. Go back to the old routes. But yeah, had a great week. Thanks to Zwift as always. If you want to hop on Zwift yourself, go to the link down below, Zwift.com. But yeah, the final, Benji, all in for Yates. What could Bike Exchange or Jayco or Lula summon up? Also, O'Connor was sort of lingering about for AG2R. This is what I want to ask here. Bilbao, right? Bilbao wins that sprint, gets over Corkscrew, and he seems to have all the characteristics of a puncher, and yet he's not competitive for this stage, and he doesn't really win Grand Tour stages either. He wins like a Tour of the Alps stage. He's not competitive at Liège or Flèche.
He won that one stage, though. Was it at the end of the Giro 1918, where Carapaz won the Giro? I think he won stage 20 after Nibali attacked and was about to win the Giro, but because he was with Roglic on that stupid stage for way too long, he lost the Giro. That's one I remember. But anyway, get your point, and I agree with your point.
Is it a fatigue thing? Is it because today was race really hard the whole race?
I actually don't know. I feel like harder stages often suit Bilbao when it comes to the way they're ridden. So it's kind of odd that today it didn't work out. And if we look at the races throughout the season, we know that he's consistent throughout the season, but maybe he's just not consistent throughout the race because the victories that he gets are also usually, doesn't make sense because he's done decent GCs in the past. So I think it's just early season. Maybe there's still a few things to tweak. I wouldn't look after it and say, oh, he's got a horrible problem for the rest of his life. I think...
My theory is he doesn't perform as well, can't do his peak or close to his peak 1 and 5 minute after a lot of kilojoules in the last couple of hours before. That's my working theory. And that if there's an easy-ish stage and then a 6 minute watt per kilo test and then a sprint from a small group afterwards, like Corkscrew, he's better.
Possible, but I swear a few years ago he won stages that were a lot harder than this one.
Yeah, I don't know. Two stages, including ahead of Lando in that stage 20 you mentioned.
But one team that was not present in the group was Ineos, because Hayter had actually had a puncture or a crash. I don't know what it was, but Plapp was waiting with about 14K to go. So you're right. He was not there. And we were focusing on what can Jayco do in this final. And we saw Matthews, like you said, giving his second pull of the day, second effort of the day. Then Derbysh took over after that, all for Yates. And then it was weird because then Dennis went to the front. I think that's for Milan Vader. And Intermarché started pacing. I think that was Bichström for Pasch, which is a bit, I don't know, I guess that was Bichström for Pasch. The thing is, Bichström has been really close in this race as well. Fifth on Corkscrew, could have a good result here as well. Pasch is just a better finisher on paper, but then again, Bichström has been winning the second group sprints or getting close on the second group sprint. So
is it Dion Smith?
Oh, could have been. That would make a lot more sense in my theory. Because
Bichström still finished in like fifth. So there's no way he was doing that pull and then finishing fifth, right?
That it would make a lot more sense if it was Dion Smith. So let's go with that working theory for now.
We're not used to the new riders and new kit. It's not like it takes us a full month. That's why TDU is so good to get used to it. By the way, before I forget, I forgot yesterday. I saw an Ineos rider or a Trek rider. I think an Ineos rider miss a bid on because they couldn't find their soigneur because too many soigneurs were in red. They were looking, and there was a Cofidis, a Trek Arkea, and an Ineos, and they missed. They went in, and like, fuck, wrong soigneur, and then it continued on.
that's actually funny. It's bad for the riders, but it's him. The team's fault. Anyway, we continue onwards. Cofidis paces forward with Kokar in the wheel, and the group is kind of reduced to 20 riders then, because at Cofidis Domestique, actually, you did a really hard pull once again. But Kokar's then left in first position, and who's going to take over? Vine moves up. UAE has a rider move to the front so that Vine doesn't have to pace himself. And then we've got a crash, eh? The rider that Dennis has been pacing for. Who crashed?
Vada, I think. Milan Vada, Mike Hoffer as well, the DSM guy, who's actually looking quite good this year. Here she was back in the group, and I was thinking maybe UAE just lead this whole damn thing out and go for here she in the sprint. And I don't know where Covey was. I think UAE were kind of using him earlier. He finished way back. Bennett was on patrolling duties. Bennett and here she were very strong. But yeah, Simon Yates, Bling did a hard lead out, and then Simon Yates just launched after UAE were kind of soft pacing, and O'Connor and Vine follow. O'Connor looked like he was suffering a bit in the wheel. Obviously, Vine doesn't need to take over. There's also, I think Yates was already ahead of Bilbao and GC, so Bilbao not being there, not that decisive, because like O'Connor's not going to gain 35, 50 seconds on him. Yates, I don't know. Yates was super strong, Benji. Both of the Yates, I know this isn't Adam, but they can kind of really keep this really heavy tempo up. And I was thinking, oh, it was Vine going to go over the top, but it just looked like no one could really counter. And the Yates brothers have this way of they really go full, like, and they put the other riders into difficulty on their wheel. And then I thought Vine was going to win the sprint. And basically this is what happens. O'Connor starts taking over. I think he thinks, oh, I can maybe move up into, you know, I can improve my GC position by this group staying away. I'm not sure who was pacing behind. I presume
Bilbao. Absolutely no clue. Probably Bilbao.
Yeah. And then Vine, Yates goes to the back. I thought like on Corkscrew stage or somewhere like that. Or no, not Corkscrew, Nettle Hill, where Yates sat on Nettle Hill. And then got completely cooked by Vine in the sprint. And then today he went to the back, and I thought it might have been something similar. Anyway, O'Connor is closed by Vine, but O'Connor was just kind of pulling. Vine leads it out, and it's over this dip, and Yates gets this perfect run in Vine's wheel on this downhill where he's virtually, yeah, like doing so many less watts, and then he comes out of Vine's wheel and nails him in the fast finish, winning the stage, but not enough to change anything on GC. Vine winning GC 11 seconds out of Simon Yates. His first GC win, I think, of anything. I think, yep. Yes, he had a lot of seconds, twice second at Turkey, second at Norway in GC. First GC win, and then 27 ahead of Bilbao, then Sheffield, Schmidt. Schmidt was kind of conspicuous in his absence in the last couple of stages, but still held on to fifth. O'Connor on 104, Bistrom 106, Tiberi 107, Izaguirre 113 in ninth, and Coquard, Seb Berwick in 13th, with the prologue being dry. He finished in the top 10. He's going to score a lot of UCI points this year. Thanks for coming. Cadel Evans, road race, you'll be seeing him there. But yeah, big win for Jay Vine, Benji. I honestly, as the biggest Jay Vine booster in history, I didn't pick him for this race. I picked Bling. And I don't think my logic was necessarily wrong. I really, the climbers really made their race their own. When you look at this top three and the gap, Vine, Yates, Bilbao, I thought it was going to be Bling, Bettiol, Sheffield or a Hayter. Hayter was a co-favorite for GC, and it really was the climbers.
Especially with this parkour. Now, Hayter could have been here, could have been in the final, but I doubt he would have been able to follow the Simon Yates attack with the form he's been showing this week. So, I don't know. The parkour, when you see it the first time around, when we saw it going into the Sandstone and under, didn't look like the most heavy parkour. No Willunga Hill, no real finishing climb as well, because Mount Lofty is not really the biggest climb in history, let's be honest about it. The last 400 meters are a bit steep, but the rest is kind of like 3-4%. And the fact that Simon Yates is able to be so decisive on this climb, and that Vine was so decisive on Nettle Hill and Corkscrew, the two climbs that were a bit more when it comes to the gradients. The climbers really used every opportunity along the way to try and gain on the riders that are not the climbers, the riders that are the punchy types and so forth. And if you have a scenario like in Étoile de Bessèges where you don't have those climbers really pushing those climbs, that you have the chance of Bettiol even winning GC after the first time trial if that doesn't happen. So It's good for the race that this happened. It's good for the race that this parkour did that. Now, Matthews, your pick initially, like, let's be honest about it, he had his puncture and he was kicked out of GC as a consequence. So we never know what would have happened if he was still in GC. I will say, however, Jayvine has had a wonderful glow up throughout the last 3 years. Like 3 years ago, to 2021, we were talking about him podiuming that Velta stage after getting hit by the car of Alpecin. He would have won that stage without the car hit. I'm keeping up that statement for the rest of my life because the comeback he made afterwards was insane. And then the year afterwards, two Velta stages, great stage in the Arctic Race of Norway together with your boy Remco and Plappy Boy. And then we see him this year starting off with, first of all, confirming that he has a decent time trial. Not a godlike time trial yet, a decent time trial. We'll see what that will grow into once he gets into wind tunnel and so forth at UAE. So that can still evolve, that can still become better. And especially because that time trial was also on a road bike. So what will he do on a time trial bike? I want to see that dynamic. Well, actually, the Australian Champs was on a time trial bike. This was on a road bike in the Santa Sudan Under. But he's had his like steps forward every single time. And I wonder what his next step is going to be, because Sanderson and under GC is great. Winning it is great, but it's not winning Tirreno. So we need to level up a tiny bit for a world tour level race with like the big boy competition. And then we can look at co-leadership at the Giro, which he already has in hand, I would say. So great move forward, I think, when it comes to Vine, right?
Yeah, I think so. It's just more experience. Like defending the jersey's tough. There's stress with it. There's people going off the front. All that experience is really useful. Useful for his teammates. Like,
well,
I'm not sure. Has Covey been in the POG teams for GC? I feel like it's usually Solaire, Micah, McNulty. I don't know. Like, I'm sure he might have been, but you know, maybe Covey's more used to all the guys having a free role and he gets to go for stages. He certainly does at Andalusia and the Giro. And today and this week, he sort of admirably was a really good in a domestique role. I think it really surprising to me, like when I think of, I look at, say, Valenciana, right? Look at the profiles. Way harder than this race. And usually I'll just be like, all right, tune into that final 20Ks, nothing's going to happen. Like, they're going to race. This will be a reduced bunch sprint 100% of the time. And they were just super aggressive. And it makes me think that I feel like teams could, if they really nail down, look at the parkour, identify where their riders could try and do something and really commit to it, we could have more aggressive racing and less settling for a sprint. Because like this stage isn't that hard. Like, you know, two categorized climbs and you got Yates ruining everyone in the final, except for Vine and O'Connor on his wheel. And, you know, not the hugest gaps, but a hard stage. It's just, it goes to show that I think sometimes organizers can do their best with the parkour. But they could have easily at this week been four Michael Matthews stages. Type stages with not that much exciting racing, but the races came to play.
I want to go back to what you said about Vine when it comes to pressure. We can talk about pressure when it comes to Vine every single day of the week, but let's be honest about it. There's been this Australian koala for the last 3 years shouting Jay Vine on this podcast by the name of Patrick Bro that has put pressure on the man's shoulders every single race. So I think he can handle pressure at this point.
Well, yeah. He'll win the Giro, so...
What noises do koalas make?
It's not pressure if you already say it will happen.
What noises do koalas make?
I don't know. They have STDs, though. Did you know that?
Let's continue with cycling.
A lot of koalas in Adelaide.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Simon Yates, good shape. Crowd was happy. I could literally hear. I can say the crowd was happy. Like, oh, Australian won GC and the Australian team won the stage. So that was good. Just to round off some housekeeping. Obviously, I said Vine won GC, but points jersey went to Bling, 4 points ahead of his teammate, Simon Yates, the blue jersey. KOM went to, Honore won it, not Vine.
Oh.
Didn't know that. So he wins the jersey in his new outing with EF after leaving Quickstep. Youth Swift Young Riders jersey, Sheffield wins that. 10 seconds ahead to Barry, who... I don't know, I'd like to see, this is the year with Tiberi. not really. I can't be like 21 years old with 2 years left in his deal. This is the year, buddy. But, you know, third GC at Tour de Hungary in 2021. And what did he come last year in Hungary? Did it again. Oh, second? He just won a stage. He's really not shown much in the big stage races or any stage races he's done since then. This is, his best result, I think, in a World Tour GC. So I'd like to see the Italian TT sort of climbing guy kick on. And Hugo Pasch was fucking good. He's really, really good. And UAE1 teams, unsurprisingly, because Bennett and she stayed way up there in GC. Paul Penaway Benji.
Yes.
Is he good enough to win a Paris-Nice sprint or a mixed Paris-Nice stage, or is it more a Dauphiné stage with more hills you're looking at, like those Hayter Van Aert stages in the Dauphiné last year?
I think we'll first see him win a Coupe de France race, a one-day race in France.
I won't be seeing it.
Because you won't be watching. No. I think
his
generally
parents
that...
will be seeing it.
The seven people on the side of the road will be seeing it. But
that's actually, there's more than seven people who watch those races. They got good crowds.
Paul Penaud, I think he's going to win a Coupe de France race. I don't see him compete for a Dauphiné sprint, even a hillier sprint in Dauphiné yet. I also expect to go Pasch to win a Coupe de France race. By the way, those two riders are going to move up. And I feel like we've got a lot of French youngsters, actually. Like, that entire bloody Groupama Conti team has overwhelmed with French talent, which is pretty great. Now, I am mentioning Pasch, who probably didn't come from that team in the first place. I don't even know where he came from. He came from Groupama Conti team. Okay, well, that's, there goes my idea. Everybody comes from the Groupama Conti team.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I think one of those two wins the Dauphiné stage. Penaud,
okay.
Pasch.
I trust you. I will fully side by your side here. I'm going to say that Romain Grégoire wins a Dauphiné stage instead, just to meme with it all. And
he'll
he's also bloody talented.
Recovering after winning Liège.
Okay, I'll take it. Now, I think that's about it when it comes to this race. We had lots of riders that showed talent, lots of riders that we weren't known with yet, that weren't known yet. Like Corbin Strong has shown himself a tiny bit, mostly at intermediate sprints, but I do expect more from that rider.
Unlucky.
Yeah, he got unlucky with that.
Crash
yesterday, he just had bad legs and crash, yeah.
Yeah.
Legendary Seb Berwick, of course.
For real, he's on. He said he's on.
Okay. What about San Juan,
What are we doing with San Juan? I would never do this. Are we in any danger of overrating a January Australian stage race? Like
you would
Bistrom,
never do it,
for example. Like
Bistrom,
how much does 7th on GC really mean here?
It just means that for the last years, he's done the same in Andalusia and Algarve. And now he's doing it at Santos Tornander. And for the rest of the year, he's Domestique then. So this confirms that he's going to be a versatile Domestique this year once again. And that's what I see Bisharm as. And it's pretty cool that he's disconnected now from Christophe, because that might offer more opportunities for him as a solo rider throughout the season. So we'll see what that gives for Bisharm. I hope to see a tiny bit more than last year, because after his one race that he did well at Algarve, he then became versatile Domestique again. So anyway, Mauro Schmidt, also big boy. Looking forward to see what he has to offer.
That's a good point. Like, does this impress you more for Schmidt than, for example, 6th in Montreal or winning Balwaza GC?
No.
Yeah,
I think
agree with you.
Balwaza GC, I don't really care too much about.
Mate.
Sorry, Belgium.
Are you okay?
I think Montreal was the biggest one for me when it comes to like proving that he can do it in one-day races. But next to that, well, mainly that, because it's also a harder
and
race.
He was good in Worlds?
Yeah, he was in that group with... he was pacing for Remco.
They full sank themselves, right?
What do you mean?
Am I thinking of a completely different race? I'm thinking of the women's race. When Van Vleuten came back, which he wasn't
Christ.
In that race. It's late here.
Yeah, Mauro Schmidt was not in the women's worlds.
All right. Well, I mean, Schmidt,
he's in the cobble team.
He should be good this year.
He's in the cobble team now?
Okay.
A quick step?
Instead of who?
Well, I can barely find 8 riders in the team these days when it comes to the cobble team. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Seneschal and Schmidt and Alaphilippe Askren. Yeah, we'll see how they go. Anyway, you mentioned San Juan. We won't be doing daily coverage of San Juan. It's not a World Tour race. We will do a wrap-up podcast. There is a preview of it on LanternRouge.com. .com, by the way. No longer .com.
Oh, la.
Yeah. Domain change, thanks to the kind generosity of one of our fans. But it took me a long time to transfer the domain because
you're incompetent.
Not my forte. yeah, LanternRouge.com. There's a San Juan preview. It's really good. I think the preview definitely surprised some of the markets when we were like, you know, Quinn Simmons can win this race because he's really good at long, steady climbs to altitude. And everyone's like, holy shit, he's been doing 30-hour weeks. But he's going to be up against it against Evenepoel, Sevilla, and Lopez, the Medellin dynamic duo. Yeah. But we'll do a recap podcast of that once it's finished. Evenepoel is basically there as a lead out man from what I can see.
Okay. Looking forward to it.
Who's winning San Juan? Prediction.
The parkour's kind of fucked up in the sense that there's like all flat stages. There's one mountain stage to Alto de Colorado, but it's the kind of stage where the gradient is like average 4% maybe for like 70 kilometers, probably overrating the climb a tiny bit. But you know what I mean? It's a stage where Remco was behind two echelons before the climb started a few years ago. And then he came back to the front. And then Miguel Eduardo Flores, that Colombian dude that everybody expected to be a god when he was performing at San Juan, just disappeared after that race. But he won that stage. Now, I think there's not much for Evenepoel to work with except echelons or whether he finds a way to drop Lopez and Sevilla and so forth on like a gradient of 4%, which Remco could probably do, but he needs to thin out the group then before then, and his team is sprinter focused, so can his team do that?
Yeah, I need.
This is one stage. There's one stage where the climb is like after 40 kilometers, a long climb, a harder climb. What if a Medellin decides to open it up there? Then they're fucking themselves,
they
right?
They won't. They won't. What? To then have Lopez pace on the fly against Remco doing it. Yeah.
Exactly. So
I think Egita is the best chance, is a good chance to win. Bonus seconds will be key. He could win that Colorado stage. Yeah, I think Quickstep got to let Remco go for it on one of the sprint stages. Loses wheel through a corner. What is anyone going to do? Nothing. So, yeah, they should try that tactic. But it'll be interesting. Go Quinn Simmons.
When it comes to sprints, Van Poppel is there for Sam Bennett.
Good sprints.
Is it too early in the season?
For what?
For Bennett to be good?
Well, who knows? I mean, with Van Poppel, you just got to sort of steer, right? sort of just puts you there. Good sprint trains here. Quickstep, they got some good trains here. So check out the sprints, Jakobsen, Bennett, Van Poppel, Merku. We'll be doing a recap podcast after all. Thanks, Zwift. Thanks, you all. And we'll see you with a few special episodes dropping next week. Till then, ciao.